Storms are rolling in the Midwest today. Many have moved into Indiana right now, and more are firing up along I-80 in Iowa. We're talking weather today, short-term, long-term, seasonal trends. We've got all the weather covered.
Live from the place I call home office via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a tussle in the troposphere with the guys from BAMWX, Michael Clark and Kirk Hins. In the final segment, Overlord John Harith churns a conversation with Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Yeah. It is some severe weather over in Indiana earlier today, and it's made its way. It's gone through southern Michigan and making its way to the east right now, and then in our neck of the woods, Davis, along I-80, both sides of Des Moines right now, there are thunderstorms that are firing up, and just in the last few minutes, in far southwest Iowa, we've got another spot that is starting to develop. That's the one that everybody's watching for later this afternoon in eastern Iowa in particular, because there is that elevated risk for some severe weather. I don't know why I'm talking about all this. Why not just let Michael and Kirk handle it?
Yeah. The big tussle in the troposphere, right?
Yes. I loved that. Yeah. I love that. But there are some severe watches out for southeast Iowa for later today that we all need to keep an eye on, and parts of Illinois, northern Missouri, also in that watch area. So, yeah, crazy stuff. Yeah. A lot of people are saying thank you for the rain. Some are saying, you know what, I've had enough. You can keep it.
Yeah, my vegetable plants are developing quite the conspiracy theories about why they're still under quarantine. And I told them, I can't plant you today. I just can't. Maybe a couple of days. And they're like, oh, sure, kick it on down the road again.
Yeah, it's for your own good, guys. It's for your own good. That's
why
like,
you we know what our own good is. Yeah. They're done with the shelter inside deal.
Oh, my gosh. Love it. Hey, we've got a bit of a jumbled presentation for you this afternoon. I'm gonna have to bail at the after the conversation with Michael and Kirk. I need to get ready for the Farm Journal Farm Country update that starts at 3 o'clock central soon as the show is over. If you haven't checked it out yet, go to farmjournal.com, look for the Farm Country update. There's all the information and details that you need are right there for you to participate in the update. We've got a great panel. Dan Bossy, Ag Resource, Paul Niefer, Clifton Larson Allen, and Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer. Yeah.
Are you leading the discussion? Are you the moderator? Is that what you're doing? Or are you part of the panel?
I am moderating. Yeah.
Sounds like something a guy should probably put on some pants for.
Do we have to?
Perhaps. Maybe no?
Do we have to? No. Let's get to what was moving markets today.
Chip, export sales of wheat in the weekend at May 7 totaled just over 353,000 metric tons, with 204,000 for delivery in the current marketing year and 150,000 metric tons for delivery in the upcoming marketing year. Both sales tallies lined up with pre-report trade expectations, although the new crop sales were at the low end of trade guesses. That served as a reminder that U.S. wheat faces tough export competition in the year ahead. July hard red winter wheat 2.5 cents lower, 451¾. July SRW firmed 0.5 cent to 502¼. July spring wheat fell 0.25 cent to 508. That was one of the features of USDA's reports, is how much competition wheat's going to face on the export market, Chip.
Exactly. And it is getting dry in wheat country. Western half of Kansas, western Oklahoma, the panhandle of Texas, eastern Colorado. Take a look at the drought monitor, the U.S. drought monitor.
Yes.
I want to talk to Michael and Kirk about that, and if we can expect any relief in hard red winter wheat country.
Well, old crop corn export sales in the week ended May 7 totaled just under 1.1 million metric tons. That was in line with trade targets. New crop corn sales of nearly 555,000 metric tons also matched up with trade expectations. China topped the list of buyers, with Mexico and Japan also on the list of featured buyers. July corn futures were 0.75 cents lower at 317.5. September corn softened a half cent to 322 even. December corn closed at 331.75, down 0.75 cents today.
It's nice to see the Chinese buying in there, but Mexico and Japan, a couple of the consistent buyers of U.S. corn, they're right there locking in their needs.
Old and new crop bean sales combined to reach nearly 1.1 million metric tons. As with corn and wheat, the tally lined up with trade expectations. Old crop bean sales totaled nearly 656,000 metric tons of new crop sales of 440,000. USDA said this morning, also announcing the sale of 132,000 metric tons, will send additional bean demand to the U.S. for the near term. July bean futures were 2.5 cents lower, 837. August off 2.25, 839. Novi bean futures, 843.75 today, down 1.75, bud.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for confirmation of some potentially scary news coming out of the Port of Santos. But as soon as I get confirmation on it, I'll let you know.
Very good. Export sales of cotton last week totaled just over 331,000 running bales, with 238,000 for shipment in the current marketing year and 93,000 for shipment in the upcoming marketing year. July cotton 39 ticks higher, 57.85. Dease cotton firmed 44 points to 57.76, Chip.
All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and grab Oliver, get him in here. Oliver Roger Slope, that. Blue Line Futures. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Don't tell anybody. I'm actually jumping the border right now. Get out of Chicago, get a haircut, and do some fishing.
Attaboy. I love that. I'm jumping the border. Don't tell anybody. Hey, so a couple of weeks ago, you said that you had filed a complaint to the CME about the price action in live cattle futures prior to the open of the day session. What's been the result of that complaint?
Well, believe it or not, CME actually took some action. They released a statement yesterday that they were going to cut the pre-market trading hours from 6 a.m. to 8:30, all the way up to 8 a.m. To 8:30. So it cuts out about 2 hours of shenanigans from what we're seeing. And if you weren't paying close attention to it, you might not know, but about 75% of the time over the last month and a half, the market was showing limit up or limit down moves, and then it would go back to normal within, 2 minutes before the open. And the market participants, honest market participants, have a hard enough time in the markets as it is. And when you throw that in the mix, it's really hard to get a game plan together for hedgers and speculators alike who just want to, trade the market the way it's meant to be traded.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Is that going to solve the problem, do you think?
Time will tell. I'm hopeful that that they did a little bit more deep diving and had a conversation with whoever was doing it. Definitely a step in the right direction.
Definitely. Good job, man. That's the way to take some action.
Aloha. Yeah, thanks, man.
All right. Hey, let's talk next week. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That is Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Real quick, I just want to throw these out there. June futures were up. June live cattle futures up 25 cents, 94.12.5. August cattle down 1.42.5, 97 bucks even. August feeders 202.5 lower, 131.05. And on the hog side of things, June lean hogs 87.5 cents higher, 58.75. July hogs fell 32.5 to 58.80. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Absolutely. If you've got any questions about weather and weather-related questions and what to expect in your part of the world, give us a holler today. It's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and when you do, make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. All right, let's bring the guys in from BAMWX.com. We've got, let's start with Kirk Hens. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing great, Chip. How are you?
I'm doing all right, doing just dandy. We've also got Michael Clark. No, not yet. We don't have Michael Clark. We're working on getting him. Kirk, we're just going to start the conversation here.
Okay,
so we got an ENSO update today from NOAA.
Uh-huh.
Did you see it? What'd you make of it?
You know, I haven't seen it specifically, Chip, but what I have seen, just to update for folks wondering about ENSO, is that I would say, especially over the last 2 to 3 weeks, we have seen it go drastically from El Nino to, you know, at least neutral to below neutral-like conditions. So it has fallen off considerably, and like we've talked in kind of weeks and months past, the speed of that evolution is everything in terms of a summer forecast. So that's something that everybody's watching very closely.
Okay. The synopsis on this here, Kirk, and we've got Michael now. Hey, Michael, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm here, and I read the ENSO report, so I might be able to help a little bit, too.
Jump in.
Yeah,
what do you got?
I mean, the subsurface temperature departures are drastically cooling. What that means is, so El Nino is eroding very quickly in terms of the sea surface temperatures. So, you know, the cooling is kind of inevitable at this point. Now, in the report, it says that ENSO neutral is most likely to continue through northern hemisphere fall. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. As of right now, for the summer outlook, we're favoring a 20 to 30% probability of La Nina. I think it's a little bit higher than that. I think that's a little conservative.
Okay. So. Now, you raised a couple of my flags there when you said that the transition is happening very quickly and the transition is cooling. That is when I start to think that we're going to see some drier conditions in the middle of the country during the growing season.
You know, you're exactly right. I mean, but here's the caveat. The response of which the global wind pattern actually starts to change and head towards La Nina is going to matter. So if the ocean waters cool quickly, the atmosphere can still resemble traits of El Nino. What that means is you can still be cooler and wetter like we are right now. And so we have to see some, there's a lag time is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So we've got to watch. When that switch does flip, that's when everyone's going to know pretty quickly when that happens, because I think the pattern can abruptly change. Timing that out is going to be crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of we have very specific analog years right now looking at this, because we have years where we've come off of El Nino and gone into La Nina where the angular momentum does not cooperate. Years like 95, 87, and 83. What happens in those years where we come off of an El Nino, we go into a La Nina, is the angular momentum, the global wind pattern doesn't really cooperate too much. And you get this ridge to set up over the Great Lakes, and you get warm and dry in the Corn Belt.
Okay.
There's a flip to this, though. If the global winds do respond, you can get hot, but you can also get wet with a northwest flow. You can see those thunderstorm clusters going around. So we're in that period where it's like a 2016 like summer, you know, where it was really hot, but it was wet.
Okay.
So we have to watch and see how do those winds respond. That's a loaded answer, I know, but that's what we're watching. Next 2 to 4 weeks are super crucial.
Okay, so Kirk, what are you going to be watching over the next 2 to 4 weeks that might indicate that we're headed towards that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm watching two things. So our forecast over the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would say, is not dry in the central U.S. So what we're watching is in a lot of those areas in southern, southwestern plains are currently very dry. So if those rains that are being forecasted from every forecast model out there do not verify or verify lower, that is a big flag, red flag, that the jet stream associated that's supposed to be bringing those rains has not responded and things remain drier. So that would be number one. The next check back in 3 weeks, if things do not verify, that is a huge red flag. The second flag to watch would be is what Michael said, the atmospheric angular momentum. It's just a fancy term for the global wind pattern. If that global wind pattern transitions to slower or negative in our weather terms much quicker, that would be the second flag to watch. Because if that happens, that will also respond to warmer and drier quicker. And forecast models just will not see that. So it'll be crucial over the next 3 weeks to see if those rains verify. If they do not, then that, I would say, is the sign.
Okay. All right. Okay, so far, you guys, talking about this longer-range outlook for our summer weather in the middle of the country, you've talked about things that I'm familiar with, that I've read about. When you guys and I had one of our first conversations on the air, I asked you about your organic forecasting methods and what you look at that are different or might be different than other forecasters look at. And there's a significant list of things that you look at that I don't know if other people even look at it. Michael, what are you getting? What is your organic forecasting tools? What's it pointing to?
Well, you know, a lot of those it's such a controversial thing. Well, that's unorthodox, or, you know, now you see more people picking up on it as we go on. It's fun to watch. But I think, you know, right now what we're seeing is, in terms of just a persistence standpoint, is the pattern is having a hard time warming up and sustaining any warmth, and it's having a hard time, you know, it's staying active. The approach here is that we believe late June, sometime around the 15th to the 25th, that things can change up pretty abruptly, perhaps. Okay. I think June starts cool. That June can start cooler, and it can still feature rainfall. There can actually maybe be an uptick in severe weather late May, early June. Okay. But we're not talking about anything outrageous. We're talking about kind of normal, just slightly cooler than normal June weather here. It's not a big deal. Now, we still believe, even though that outlook is favoring that cooler deal, that the heart of the growing season this year may be under risk to a ridge, a heat dome, where this pattern flips. Based on what we're seeing, it may flip at a very unfavorable time, and there could be issues to deal with when that does happen. So that's, if we had to make a gut call based on that, we still believe that's a risk right now that we definitely have to pay close attention to.
Okay, so before we get to some specific regions, before we get to, because I want to talk about this afternoon's weather too here when we get back in the next segment, because I know that there's some risks out there for some severe weather in eastern Iowa, Illinois, Missouri. But if you guys had to classify this summer's growing season as positive, neutral, or negative for yields, what are you going to say, Michael?
I'll tell you, Chip, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to give you two answers, but I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
The first answer is because if the current pattern continues and there's really no huge decline in you know, moisture, they could be very, very good. We haven't had the serious weather delays or replant issues from weather like we've had the last several years.
Right.
We're going into a pattern that's going to get warm, it's going to get cool, but you're going to get rain, but you're not going to get a ton of rain.
Okay.
So I see it as favorable.
And possibly it sounds pretty Cinderella to me.
it's very good. It could be too good, you know. It could be one of those deals that's just really good. Now, here's the caveat is, the only thing that could throw a wrench in it is if right around pollination, right around when it's time for the most critical time,
that's when our red flags are raised the most for the potential of the La Nina characteristics to set in.
Okay.
So that's where, you know, but overall, if I had to sum up June, July, August, it's probably not that bad.
Okay.
Right now.
All right. Very good. Very good. Now, like I said, I want to talk about the weather that we've got in store for us this afternoon in the middle of the country. And then I want to get into some of the regions. When you take a look at the U.S. Drought Monitor, guys, we've got that dry area in hard red winter wheat country. Is that going to stick around? Are we going to see some relief in the southwest U.S.? That's coming up next. We're talking with the guys from BAMWX on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Some high-level Chinese execs expect China to speed up Phase 1 purchases. The vice general manager for China's COFCO said China will still implement the trade deal, and chances are high that China will speed up purchases. China has also opened its doors to U.S. barley and blueberries. According to the Financial Times, the U.K. is preparing a, quote, big concession package on U.S. ag goods to speed along the trade talks. A Wall Street Journal poll says some ugly unemployment and GDP numbers are coming, but most expect a recovery in the U.S. economy to begin in the second half of 2020. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're talking to the guys from BAMWX. Before we do that and get back to that, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Sure thing, Chip. Well, July hard red winter wheat was 2.5 cents lower, 451 and three quarters. July soft red firmed 0.5 cent to 5.02 and a quarter. July corn futures were 0.75 cents lower, 317 and a half. December corn closed at 331 and three quarters, down 0.75 cents. July bean futures were 2.5 cents lower, 837. Novi beans closed at 843 and three quarters, down 1.75 cents. July cotton, 39 ticks higher, 57.85. And on the livestock side, June live cattle futures firmed 25 cents to 94.12 and a half, and August feeders were 202 and a half lower, 131.05. And June lean hogs, 87 and one half cents higher to 58.75. There's your quick market recap. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, let's do this first. Class 3 milk futures today. The May contract was up 37 cents, 12.45.
Okay.
But the June contract up 75 cents, July up 75 cents, August up 75 cents. We've got those markets now. June at 16.10, the August at 17.41. There's been a big move in this milk market, and it's providing some opportunities that are desperately needed in this dairy industry right now. Mike North, like I said at the start of the show, I got to bail and get ready for the Farm Country update that's coming up at 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. But Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group is going to be on. John Harith is going to come in. And you guys are going to have a conversation about the opportunities that are there right now to increase some coverage. It's very important conversation for the dairy guys. Okay?
Yeah, 10-4. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get back to the weather conversation. Michael Clark, Kirk Hens, BAMWX.com. You know, Michael, I don't get a chance to do this often enough. Thank you for stepping in and giving us a look at what to expect from the weather every Monday morning.
Hey, no problem. It's my pleasure. I'm very happy for the opportunity.
Good deal. Hey, one other thing, don't you have a webinar coming right up?
We do, yes. It's free to attend. It's our summer outlook. We're going to go over everything in detail. It's next Wednesday at 11 a.m. You just got to go to bamwx.com/webinar, and you sign up. It's free. And that webinar will go from about 11 to 11:30 next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. So it's a free webinar. Just go to BAMWX.com/webinar, and you can find all the details there. Okay. Kirk, what's the deal with the threats that we've got in the middle of the country for this afternoon?
Oh, man. It's kind of multifaceted. And let me just kind of draw out a picture of the area that we're kind of looking at here. I would say eastern Kansas, southern, southeastern Iowa, I think a good portion of Missouri, if not the whole state. I think the northern half to especially northern Illinois and northern Indiana. It's like a 5-state-wide band there that we're talking excessive rainfall, flash flooding, I think damaging winds, hail, and isolated tornadoes. I really think everything's on the table here, and it is going to be a massive line of just heavy rainfall setting up shop. So I would say that the risk for that, we're already starting to see that on radar, but as we're kind of getting towards sunset tonight and into the overnight, it will be very active.
Okay. Which area might have the highest risk, guys?
I would say in terms of the severe weather, that's going to be more in the plains. I would say watching eastern parts of Kansas and southern Iowa and more like Missouri for that severe weather. The excessiveness of the rain, I would say, going to be in the heaviest. I would say watching northern Illinois, northern Indiana, those locations. There could definitely be inches, 2, 3, 4 inches of rain, I think, is not off the table in some of these areas. So it is a healthy rain.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, some of these areas, Michael, when you take a look at the U.S. drought monitor, some of these areas have been missing out on rains and missing out consistently. I'm talking about the Panhandle region, Texas, Oklahoma, eastern Colorado, western Kansas. And as we just got this from at Nebraska 1, I love that, Brad. That's good. Nebraska 1. In south central Nebraska, he says he's out fixing fence right now and the grass could use a drink. It's gotten dry in those areas. And then there's a streak that runs diagonal from southwest to northeast Iowa in there too.
Yeah, you're right. And that's exactly the area, Chip, we're watching, that if it continues to stay dry in there and those rains failed, as Kirk mentioned, that's where the tendency for the ridging to develop as we get into the growing season will exist, because really over the next 1 to 2 weeks, there's not a ton of relief in there for those folks. So that, as we've been talking about for several weeks in our updates daily, we're worried about the possible expansion or growth of that. And that's where we've really got to watch the next 2 to 3 weeks to see what these global winds do and how they respond, because it's really going to it's going to be the telltale if are we going to get the tendency to ridge out or not. And then those right now are the precursors, and I don't see a ton of relief even in the next 10 days for those folks, especially our friend there in Nebraska.
What about temperatures in that region here over the next week, 10 days?
Yeah, Kirk, what do you think about that in terms of the temperature?
Oh, yeah, they're actually even going to warm up even more. So I would say in those exact areas, hard red winter wheat areas like eastern Colorado, western Kansas, the western parts, central parts of Nebraska, the Dakotas, we're definitely going to warm up to much above normal. So we are going to enter a pattern, especially getting into next week, where I think there's a legit shot of 3, 4, 5 days in a row where there's no precipitation across anywhere in the plains, and it is 5 to 10 degrees plus above normal here. So next 10 days, I would say, in those areas are at least much above normal in temperature and very little moisture to have. And that's as that ridge of high pressure, it's actually called an omega block in the weather world, is going to set up, and that cuts off moisture almost completely.
Okay. Wow. That's for a crop that has just been through so much over there with the freeze, and it's been there's been some cold, that some too much rain in parts of the area, but now with the heat and the dry conditions, that's going to be awfully hard on that HRW crop down there, I would sure think. Yep. I know that there are some in the Panhandle area that are looking at, I'm talking about you, Jared McDaniel, that are talking about turning turning cattle out on that winter wheat crop, just trying to get some value out of that winter wheat crop. So kind of a tough situation there. What else are we missing, you guys? what are you looking at every day that's making you think?
I think what's making me think right now is that area that's already dry and the fact that a La Nina is developing. We're going to see, in my opinion, Chip, we're going to get a ridge this summer. The question is that ridge over the Great Lakes or is it over the Southwestern Plains? Because if it's over the Great Lakes, we're going to shut off precips for the Corn Belt. If it's over the Southwestern Plains, we're going to get really hot and those folks are going to get drier, but the Corn Belt can get Northwest flow precip.
Right.
The question is, where does that ridge, I know of what's coming. I think it's just a matter of where and when, but we do think it's going to happen. So,
Kirk, to back up what Michael was just saying, I think that's what he was talking about on the pollination period for the corn, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was just about to talk about. And I think Michael feels very confident that ridge will set up, and it could be 30 days, it could be 45 days. The question is that going to be as we're getting into, early mid-June? Or is that going to be as we are concluding June, as we're going all the way through July and into early August? I don't think it's a question of if it's going to set up. I think it's a question of when it's going to set up, because El Nino towards La Nina drop-off is significant, which is telling because the global winds will respond. They will slow down and they will go negative. It's just a matter of, is it 3 weeks or is it 6 weeks?
Okay.
So that is crucial.
I want to go a little international on us here real quick. Kirk, this development of La Nina, is that going to bring some moisture in for Australia?
In that area, Chip, to be honest, I would have to do a little bit more research.
Okay.
I could probably answer that a little bit better for South America. I would be happy to get more for Australia. But I would say for South America, some of the areas that are hurting tremendously, and that's especially southern Brazil. I mean, there's some areas that have been a foot and a half below in terms of moisture. That La Nina switch, I think, as we're kind of concluding the growing season down there, is going to shut off even more precipitation. So in those areas, most of the areas in central eastern Brazil have been good for precipitation. Argentina has been decent for precipitation, but some significant areas in southern Brazil, as we kind of conclude the Safrina second crop corn crop and some beans and some wheat down there, I do not believe are going to see the relief that is needed. So I'll check back on the Australia stuff and I'll give you a better answer on that.
Awesome. Awesome. You guys, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon. Real quick, Michael, let's hear the details on how to sign up for that webinar again.
Yeah. It's bamwx.com/webinar. Just enter your info. It's free to attend. It's next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. We'd love to have you there. You guys can ask questions and interact with us and all that good stuff.
Very cool. Very cool, you guys. Thank you so much, Kirk. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Thank you, Chip. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks, Mike. All right. That is Michael Clark and Kirk Hands, bamwx.com. I'm out of here. I got to get hooked into the system for the Farm Journal Farm Country Update. John Harith, Davis Michelson, and Mike North coming up next, right here on AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on for our family and yours. But that's how
it goes. Best mashup ever. Your pal Davis Michelson here, along with Ozzy Osbourne doing September. Yeah. It's a great little mashup. Davis Michelson here, along with Overlord John Harith from Farm Journal Broadcast. And Chip had to skip off and do some other things, which is great. And that gives us an opportunity to talk with Mike North for just a little bit. Mike, we mentioned it at the bottom of the hour here, but looking at the Class 3 milk futures, okay, May is up 37 cents on the day, 12:45. But, man, if we look out to the August 20, we're up at 17:41.
In fact, the June, July, and August contracts all up, looks like 75 today. What's that telling us about milk? We obviously, the dairies had a rough go of it, as have most other industries that we cover. What can we learn from these futures moves today?
Well, really, it's a manifestation of the farm-to-family food box program. If you look at the five different buckets that the USDA is essentially using to draw products from to make these food boxes, you have fresh produce, you have pre-cooked meats, and then you have dairy products in bucket number three, fluid milk in bucket number four, and then bucket number five is a combination of buckets two, three, and four. And so dairy has a big, big chunk of that food box program. And, you know, previously they were going to spread that out over a 10 to 12 month period. Now they're saying we're going to ramp this all up and we're going to get this done in, you know, the second half of May, June, July. And so there's been this rush by people who have these contracts awarded to them from the government to come in and source product necessary for these food boxes. So it's been driving the price of product at a very, very fast pace. We've watched cheese prices, which if you look at the CME spot, we traded a dollar just 2.5 weeks ago. Today, the block price finished at $1.75 after rising 17.25 cents. Mm-hmm. And so when you go back and you start taking a look at all that has transpired in the course of, you know, the last few weeks, there's been some big, big movement. 75% appreciation in the value of block cheddar in a 3 week time. It is amazing how much movement we've seen. Generally, as a quick rule of thumb, every penny in cheese translates to a dime move in class three milk. So when you see 75 cents move in cheese, you would expect $7.50 move in class three milk. And if you go back to these nearby contracts, the June contract today is at $16.10, as you pointed out. It's up 75 cents, the limit. If you go back to the 22nd of April, we were trading at $10.68 as a low. So this thing has run at a very, very fast pace. And obviously the question is, how long can it go? You know, right. You know, what kind of price could we hit? Well, I will say this, June cheese futures were up 15 cents today. And there's a little bit of a disjointedness between the limit moves on product right now and the limit moves on milk. The CME is looking at that and potentially may change that down the road. No decisions there. But with cheese up 15 cents today, that suggests tomorrow could be up limit again. And mm-hmm. so that would be 4 out of 5 days this week that the June contract would be up the limit. That's a lot of movement in a single week, but it opens the door to some really nice opportunities. If you take a look at what's out there right now, the quarter's average for Q3 milk is $17.27. The fourth quarter is at $16.95. So in other words, the second half average is $17.11. Now, to put that in perspective, the last time we were at that level was back in late February, before coronavirus even took hold of our economy, or before we started shutting down states, and before all of this really was an issue in our eyes. So to talk about this move, it's really a great second chance for dairymen to step in and get some coverage in place. Lots of different ways to do that, obviously. Yeah, options and futures are out there, contracts to the plant. One of the more popular options right now for many is DRP. Our company is a big participant in that space and offer that product as well. But what we are seeing is a rise in interest there. The interesting thing about that particular product, yesterday when milk was limited up in the month of July, it was unavailable in terms of being able to purchase DRP, because one of the stipulations of DRP is that if the market makes a limit move, it will not be available on that particular day to be bought by producers. That's going to happen again today in Q3. So again, it will not be available today. And if we're up limit again tomorrow in the month of July, it will not be available tomorrow either. But with the move that it's making, it's certainly putting us into some pretty good territory whereby producers can step out there. And even with the way the market is today, if I look at a $17.11 average on the second half of the year, then on average, I'm able to put a coverage level in place at $16.25 for the rest of 2020. That was not even close to being considered in the month of April as we were dumping milk. So when we talk about this opportunity, it takes us back within about 50 to 80 cents of the high that we had earlier in the year. It puts us into some territory where guys are profitable again. And ultimately, we can set some floors in place that assure us that no matter what happens on the other side, once these contracts are filled and the food boxes are done and all these people leave this space, you know, we're going to let everything settle out. And right now we can assure that even if it goes back to where we just came from, guys can be profitable for the rest of the year.
Yeah, Mike, quickly, how big is that window? Because as soon as that $3 billion in CFAP is spent, the craziness ends unless Congress does something else. So what kind of a window are we looking at?
So at this stage in the game, you generally see the biggest interest in those first couple of weeks to fill those contracts, because logistically they have to put everything in order for that entire, you know, 2.5 month window. That window could be relatively short. It may only be a week or two, but, you know, in terms of price, the other part is how much powder do these guys have left? How much room did they give themselves in the contract to pay up for product? They might be at the end of their rope as well.
All right. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for the update today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for today. Davis, that's the greatest thing about this show is when we got breaking news like that, we've got great people like Mike that will come in and give us the latest right at the last minute. It's tremendous for Mike to do that for us.
Mike, well, that's going to wrap it up. Commodity Risk Management. Yep.
That's right. For Davis, producer Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, the free-for-all.